This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And I'm Yannick Mangin.
And what's our topic tonight, Yannick?
Streaming video games on Twitch and YouTube gaming.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. And before we start, obviously we have follow-ups.
You have quite a bit of it.
I think I'll be able to do it under 2 minutes. So let's start, and let's hope I will respect that. So first, did you wake up at 3 in the morning on September 12th?
Nope. I was awake, but I did not order an iPhone.
Oh, and you did not answer me because I was awake ordering a phone? Oh, man. Okay, I'll skip that part. So, yeah, obviously, like I just said, I was ordering a phone, and I did order a new phone, and nope, I did not get a 6S Plus before you asked, Yannick. So I went with the 6, cried a bit, and let's hope I won't regret that. But
let me ask the most important question. Did you get it in rose gold?
I did not, but I still got it in gold because you know that my current phone is gold. And I was maybe thinking of going back to space gray. Going back to... did I ever own a black phone? Oh, I did not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no. So I was thinking to go and buy a space gray / black phone this year, but at the last minute I was like, screw it.
Should have gone with rose gold.
No. But by the way, Tony loves it. He's like, he wants to see it in person. And he's not the first person I hear say that.
Oh, so, I love it too. I would buy a rose gold if I was upgrading this year, but I'm not.
Huh. So I'm eager to see it in person though. I don't think I will like it that much, but new color, always want to see them in person.
Yeah.
Good. After that, so I might have or I might not have received an Apple TV, and I might speak about it or I might not speak about it later, and obviously I might or might not have opened a box containing it and plugged it on my TV, and that's probably what I can say about it.
It might or might not have cost $1.
$1.15.
Yeah,
plus taxes. Yeah,
with tax, amazing.
Indeed. So, yeah, I might have an Apple TV, but I cannot confirm or deny that.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to ask you weird questions coded in Morse code about it later, and maybe then I can translate the Morse code back into something from an anonymous source, so we can talk about it on another episode someday, maybe.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe we can just wait for it to be out.
We can do that. Or I can send you a RUT13 messages over line and hope it works.
This is true. Is that it for your follow-up?
It is.
All right. So. I have some follow-up going all the way back to episode 10.
Oh, wow.
All right. Yeah. So on episode 10, we were speculating about the new MacBook because it could have been ARM given its performance, and they decided to go with Intel. And we were talking about how close iOS devices were to catching up with the performance of the MacBook. And just today, reviews of the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus have been released, and in certain cases, it outperforms the 2015 MacBook. So I really have zero understanding of why the 2015 MacBook uses Intel processors when it could have been the same exact processor that was in the iPhone and could have done a very good job.
Seriously, today I was looking at the numbers. I was like, just flabbergasted. Seriously. Like, we were speaking about those at work during lunchtime, and we were like, what? Like, can you imagine the numbers we will see from the iPad Pro now that we see those numbers on the iPhones?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the iPad Pro necessarily being proportionally that good, because it has a larger screen to deal with and all that stuff, and presumably the pencil and all that stuff has more required overhead than just the small screens, well, relatively small screens on the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, but it is quite interesting to see that kind of performance coming out of a phone.
Also, according to those benchmark that got released today, it seems that those new A9 CPUs are clocked a little bit higher compared to the A8 ones. And it might be related to the fact that we got a shrink of CPU this time around.
Yeah. Anyway, very excited to see if that leads to ARM Max finally after almost 5 years of rumors that ARM Max are coming. Maybe it'll happen next year. Who knows? But recent Intel delays for chipsets and all of that stuff really makes everyone angry at Intel. I'm one of the people who are angry at Intel because I spent like, 2 years waiting for them to release a new chipset so I can buy a new laptop. And it would be nice to see ARM Max finally happen, at the very least, on the low end of the lineup. So if that's going to be interesting.
I wanted to say, if we can go for a small touch about Intel, I was like, even if Apple wants to release new laptops with those new chips, at least they are not the only one stuck in this with this problem. Like, all of the desktop and laptop industry are kind of forced to wait for Intel to release those and get their act together and finally ship those.
It's true, but it also makes it that much clearer that the PC is a commodity market and that Apple is basically dependent on the same parts as everybody else, and they can't really stand out in a meaningful way on the CPU front unless they go to ARM. And I'm sure that they can't actually go to ARM for the MacBook Pro and all that stuff because ARM isn't there for those high-performance applications that people buy MacBook Pros for necessarily. But on the MacBook side of things, I see no reason why they couldn't go to ARM.
Or release more iPad Pros.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if you're going to make a shitty MacBook, you just don't make a shitty MacBook. That's my way of seeing things. Anyway, next up, follow-up for episode 22, when I talked about the flexibility of application design in a post-cloud service world. We talked a little bit about React Native and how I wasn't sure if it was possible to write a cross-platform application entirely in React and have it deployed to multiple platforms. Well, guess what? Facebook did it. They did it with their ad management dashboard, which is maybe the least exciting thing that they could have done, but who cares? And there's going to be a blog post in the show notes to how they did their cross-platform application development with React.
Real-time follow-up, by the way, you meant episode 23.
You're mean. I hate you.
Next up in your list?
Yeah. Also, I listened this week to a lot of Apple-related podcasts and last week as well about the event. And guess what? I wasn't the only grumpy person. So maybe my grumpiness was justified. Maybe I was a little tiny bit, a little over grumpy on the last episode. But I was not alone in being grumpy or underwhelmed by the stuff. And I am... once again, very happy to see that I was right.
I'm grumpy because most people were grumpy about the event, where when, in my opinion, there was no big reason to be grumpy about it. But
now, as I promised on the last episode, this week's episode is about something that I am positive about mostly. So I am going to take a tiny bit of time in this follow-up to actually be very, very grumpy about another issue that came up since the last episode. And it's also going to come with advice for fixing this problem if you are in the audience and have this problem yourself, and that is watchOS 2 upgrades. If you upgrade to watchOS 2 and your battery life goes down significantly, and by that I mean down to maybe a third of what it was before, I can last about 2 days on a normal Apple Watch charge, and after the update, I was dying. My battery was dying in like 5 hours. If you have this, the fix is to repair your watch with your phone. Yes, this means you are wiping your watch entirely and resyncing everything in you. There's nothing else you can do about it. It's the only thing you can do. It works. It fixes your battery life once you've done it. And I've done it twice in the last 2 weeks because I did it once for the GM and I did it once again for the post-GM fixed version, which is the release version that came out yesterday. And it pisses me off that this upgrade bug exists, but there's a fix and you can do it. It's still inexcusable, but hey, that's the fix. So public service announcement, do that if you're having any battery life issues on watchOS 2.
I have no real data to back my claims, but it seems that people are complaining right now about issues with either watchOS 2 or weird issue with iOS 9 are people that were on the beta and then upgraded to the public release because it was feasible to do so via over-the-air updates. And like I just said, I have no data to back that up probably, but it seems that most people I know that are complaining with weird bugs right now about iOS 9 or watchOS 2 are people that were on the beta cycle and upgraded to the normal release.
Well, I've had no issues with iOS 9 itself, and I don't know anyone who wasn't on the watchOS 2 GM or beta prior to upgrading to the thing, so I can't really back that up with any data of my own. But I'm just saying, if you're a listener and you're having these issues, repair your watch and the battery life issues will go away. And who knows what the cause is, but it's inexcusable anyway.
I'll see that in a couple of days because I'm still on iOS 8.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Next follow-up. There are two items left. We're almost there. I was very grumpy on the last episode about the possible situation where application developers don't find the App Store to be a sustainable marketplace for pro apps and just don't make pro apps for the iPad Pro. And on the very day we recorded, the Sketch developers, which is an application for drawing vector graphics for use in iOS apps and Mac apps, basically, more or less, they announced that they were not going to go forward and make an iPad Pro of their app because they don't perceive the App Store as being a viable marketplace for pro apps. Which makes me very sad, but I understand it from their perspective as well. I'm not sure what it's going to take for indie developers to put their faith into the iPad Pro, but I really hope the iPad Pro doesn't get screwed by not having any pro apps on it a year from now when I might be tempted to upgrade to the second generation iPad Pro if that comes out next year. So that was the first thing. And the second thing, still about the iPad Pro, is a blog post about the iPad Pro as a Greek tragedy. Basically, in the mid-90s, Apple was dependent on Adobe and Microsoft. And on Steve Jobs' return, Apple did everything they could do to avoid being dependent on third-party developers. And now they're screwed again, because now that indie developers have been completely screwed out of the marketplace for pro apps, they are once again dependent on the two companies that demoed at the event 2 weeks ago, Adobe and Microsoft. And basically, they control the iPad Pro's viability as a product again. I'm not sure I agree with this 100%, but it was an amusing read for people who are familiar with mid-90s Apple, and I found it very interesting.
Yeah, it was funny that it was drawing the comparison of, like, see, Apple is always making fun of Microsoft, but they are still saving their ass off again. It's like, oh my goodness. Comparison is maybe a little weak, but we'll see.
Yeah. So now we're ready to move on to the main topic. Before I talk about streams themselves, I should probably introduce Twitch and YouTube gaming to the audience if they are not familiar with it. So Twitch.tv is a website where you can stream video games to an audience of video game fans. It is a gaming offshoot of Justin.tv, which a long, long time ago was the very first, well, I don't think it qualifies as the first, but one of the first live camming websites where Justin, I don't remember his name, but it was Justin, wore a camera on his hat, and it was connected to the internet via 3G, and he was streaming his life 24/7, except when he was in the bathroom or whatever. And eventually, they turned that into a more generic streaming site where other people could start live camming their lives. And then they quickly realized that live camming was a very, very niche thing that only very few people, crazy people, would do. So they expanded it to general streaming. And then they decided to offshoot and create Twitch.tv for specifically gaming, because it was taking over Justin.tv very, very quickly. And there were certain things that could be done to minimize latency and all that stuff that made gamers very excited about it. So they spun off that part of the site. You may have heard about it in the news as lately as last August, because they were acquired by Amazon after about a year of rumors that they were going to be acquired by Google and YouTube. And what's interesting about Twitch is that they offer monetization options for streamers through their partner program. And there are two things. There's ad revenue share, which is not entirely novel. And there are subscriptions, which basically allows you to pay a monthly subscription to the streamers that you like. and a portion of that goes to twitch.tv, and the rest of it goes directly to the streamer, which means you can, instead of paying a flat fee for the entire site, you pay basically, if you are a fan of X streamer or Y streamer, you will pay maybe, I don't know, $5 for that streamer's subscription every month, and you will get some perks in exchange. And we'll talk a little bit more about those perks later. And that's sort of different from other streaming sites. And currently, they detain the biggest audience for live gaming, despite having quite a few mishaps along the way that caused temporary exoduses to other websites, including Hitbox, which is their main competitor in the gaming streaming scene, up until YouTube Gaming showed up. It launched a couple weeks ago. It's a messy, confusing front end to YouTube's gaming content. Unlike Twitch, where you have to be a certain level of popularity to become a Twitch partner, monetization is open to everyone. So that means that if you are angry at Twitch because they don't think you're popular enough to become a partner, you can go to YouTube and get a penny every couple of weeks if you are not a very popular streamer and feel better about yourself than getting zero over on Twitch, even though you're still basically making zero. The app is only available in select countries right now. I believe it's only in 3 English-speaking countries, US, UK, and maybe Australia. But the website is usable by everyone, except if you're in Germany. Big question mark as to why. What makes it sort of different from Twitch is that it's a one-stop shop for pre-recorded / edited content, such as Let's Plays and reviews. And they also have the live streams, and they are focusing on live streaming quite significantly, presumably to try and dethrone Twitch's monopoly in that space, basically. It seems very promising on paper, but I find it very lacking in practice. And before we move on, I'd like to ask you, Ducarivi, have you really watched video game streams on Twitch or on YouTube Gaming before?
Not really, to be honest.
Okay.
And maybe if I can make a small comparison of my YouTube habits these days, is like, I would compare, like, maybe it's obviously, it's not live stream stuff, but the videos that I watch the most recently is what they call one takes, is where somebody's driving a car and just filming himself, which I would compare as just watching people playing video games and commenting about what they're doing or their experience and blah, blah, blah. Those I watch tons of them.
Yeah, I know my brother and my dad love those. I personally don't understand it very much, but I'm not a car person, so that probably has something to do with it.
It's the same way. I kind of don't understand why you want to watch a live stream, but oh well.
Well, I'll try to explain that throughout the episode. So there are things to like about video game streams, but they're not necessarily what you might expect based on what are in the top charts, basically. If you go look at the top charts for Twitch streams and whatnot, you'll find a lot of weird stuff, and I'm going to try to explain some of that weird stuff. Starting off with esports. Esports are unwatchable to me because they're basically trying to be the same as regular sports, and everything that makes regular sports unwatchable and repulsive is in esports, more or less. The commentary is over the top and insanely annoying in basically almost all of the esports streams. It's kind of amazing that people are even able to watch this stuff and not die. It also doesn't help that I'm not a fan of most of the games that are being played competitively anyway. Mostly MOBA games or real-time strategy games. I like real-time strategy games, but not when there's some obnoxious dude yelling over it. So that's sort of an issue. One notable exception is fighting game tournaments. I love fighting games. I like watching fighting game tournaments, especially EVO every year. That's really interesting. But only when they have commentators that are not crazy. And EVO seems to do a good job of that, but sometimes it's just unbearable to me. And I will admit it, sometimes I've just watched the Japanese streams instead for certain fighting game tournaments because the Japanese commentators are not very excited about what's going on, and that just makes it easier to focus on the game being played instead of trying to shut the guy up mentally in your in your head while you're watching this thing. I suppose volume down also works, but then you don't hear the audio of the game, which I kind of want to hear. Next up, there's promotional streams, and this can include a bunch of things. There's press conferences during E3. There's game reveal streams. So one of the games I'm a big fan of, and we're going to talk about a little bit throughout the episode, Destiny. They had a new expansion come out last week, and I've been playing it nonstop since then. But leading up to the launch of the expansion, they were having a stream every Wednesday at 3 p.m. where they would show off a new part of the game that they hadn't talked about previously and explain the new mechanics of the expansion. And that is really interesting to keep people talking about your game in the month prior to launch, basically. You unveil a little bit every week for about an hour and keep people thinking about your game and excited about what's coming soon. And I find that to be a very, very effective strategy. The big asterisk for that is you have to be enthusiastic about the game beforehand. Otherwise, if you're not enthusiastic about a specific game, you're not going to watch the stream that's dedicated to that game's announcements. I think Mario Kart 8 had a thing similar to this leading up to launch. And a couple other Nintendo games that I think there was a Splatoon one as well. Speaking of Nintendo, they sort of kicked off this whole thing with Nintendo Direct. Nintendo Direct were basically these streams that they were doing fairly regularly. Recently, they haven't done them because of the death of Satoru Iwata, and he was the host of those, so it was sort of a touchy thing to sort of have a Nintendo Direct in the last few months. But they've announced that they will resume soon, and that's going to be interesting. But basically, it gives Nintendo a direct channel to their audience, and they can announce whatever, and everyone who's watching more or less is guaranteed to be a Nintendo fan, otherwise they're not watching. And I'm sure you can back me up on this. When a Nintendo Direct is happening, Twitter lights up and everybody is like, "New Yoshi amiibo, oh my god," and then they throw money at the screen.
The same way we do so when there's an Apple event.
Yeah, it's basically the Apple event of Nintendo, except it happens much more regularly.
Yeah, and if I go back to your initial question of me watching videos, video game streams, I would put a promotional streams at the top of my list. Like, these days when I watch those types of videos or streams, this will be the first ones that I watch, either live or afterwards. Because it feels to me that this is the way that I can still keep up with either video game news or like what's hot at this moment while not being so much immersed into the video game industry / culture.
Yeah, and it helps that at least for the big press conferences, there are like 3 big gaming events a year. So it's not overwhelming. You're not watching an hour and a half, 2 hour stream every week to keep up with the news, basically.
And at least for me, it's just enough to remind me of the big games I want to play.
Yeah.
Best example of that recently is the new Uncharted. Like, if I recall correctly, at E3 or maybe before E3, they released like a long, like 10 minutes teaser of the game. And then maybe it was a short version, and then they released a couple of weeks later a long version. And just to make sure, and obviously everybody was ramping about that on Twitter and everybody on like most of the gaming stuff that I saw on YouTube was about this new preview. So those type of events are just what I need to keep me informed,
yeah,
while not being immersed and being overwhelmed by all of this information, the same way that I don't care of being immersed about other subject.
Yeah. One of the things that Twitch and I guess now YouTube Gaming have sort of made really convenient for gamers is whenever a big event comes along, like E3 or whatnot, there's one centralized location where you can get all of the press conferences. Because in the years leading up to Twitch becoming a thing and whatnot, you had to look all over the place to find the right stream. And certain people were streaming on livestream.com and some people were streaming on Ustream. And it became just untenable to try and figure out the web of where you have to go to watch these things. Now you can just launch the Twitch app on your iPad and there's an E3 button and you press it and if it's not taking you directly to the stream of the thing that's on right now, you're going to see a list, a directory of streams that include very highly, like, top viewers, the stream that you need to be watching to watch a certain event. So that's really interesting as well. It's really simplified E3 and, well, I guess not CES, but like Tokyo Game Show and all those events by consolidating everything into one place. Next up on the things you can find on Twitch list is speedrunners. It's incredibly entertaining to watch people who are really skilled at a video game try to beat it in as little time as possible. And there's a thing you see when you watch a speedrun stream, which are called splits, which basically, usually on the left or right side of the screen, they'll have the game split up into various segments, basically checkpoints, where they can mash the space bar or enter on their keyboard, and it'll basically do like a lap counter for where they are in their speedrun. And you can see, relative to their best run, how well did they do? And what are the odds that they're going to catch up to their personal best time or to the world record? And it really helps you put what they're doing into perspective. Because if you're just watching someone play the same game over and over again without any context, you sort of wonder, well, are they doing it any better than they usually do or not? Whereas when you can see the splits right there on the side of the screen, it's incredibly useful into finding out like if they're doing anything good or if they're just having a really bad day or what. So that's really interesting. One notable exception to the speedruns having splits rule is marathon events. So twice a year, there are these Games Done Quick events. There's Summer Games Done Quick, which ended a couple months ago, and there's Awesome Games Done Quick, which is during the winter. And those are charity marathons of speedruns for an entire week, 24/7 speedrunning on Twitch. They raise a bunch of money for the Prevent Cancer Foundation and Doctors Without Borders, I believe. And it's an incredibly entertaining event because they have a bunch of weird glitches that they exploit in every game. And also because it's just a big event that most of the gaming community is paying attention to. And people are always like, oh, did you watch this speedrun? It was really good. Oh, no, well, I'm going to wait for it to be archived on YouTube. And then a couple hours later, you can go watch it on YouTube and have really fun stuff. One example of this, during Summer Games Done Quick, there was a Shenmue 2 run. And I don't actually know anything about Shenmue 2. Actually, it might have been Shenmue 1. I don't remember. But anyway, it was a Shenmue run. And there's this thing called Duck Percent, where by doing incredibly arcane things in the game world, you can unlock duck racing in the game. And it was speedrunning doing that series of arcane things to unlock duck racing. And then when you get to the duck racing, it is the most ridiculous minigame you've ever seen in a video game before.
It's duck racing?
Duck racing. You bet on ducks that are racing around a little track.
My goodness. It's the same way you crazy. Do with dogs?
Yeah, basically, except you have to do like the most ridiculous things. Like a normal person would never find this mini game. You just like you have to catch a specific leaf falling down a tree to enable the sequence. And then you have to talk to certain peoples and do this entire weird side quest. And then you get access to the duck track and you can go do duck racing. It's incredibly nuts, but it was the most hilarious things. And Duck Percent was basically an incentive that they were saying, if we raise this much money for charity, we're going to do the duck racing thing as a bonus. And they raised enough money, and I got to see this crazy duck racing thing that I never knew about in this game. So there's a ton of really entertaining stuff like that in those Games Done Quick events. And I think they're really worth watching if you're interested in video games. And even if you're not usually interested in games, there's a lot of really amazing stuff you can see in those events. You just have to know what to watch, which is sort of the issue.
And if I recall correctly, one of my first speedrun that I watch is one from one of those events that you linked to me.
Oh, the Kaizo Mario one.
Yeah, the Kaizo Mario.
Oh my god, yes.
I was looking for the name. I was thinking about the name. I was like, oh, but yeah. So it's, if I recall correctly, that's ROM running on an emulator that people act or modified to make it way more harder than the normal Mario games.
Yes, and unfortunately the original videos for Kaizo Mario got pulled down by Nintendo as soon as Mario Maker came out. They were like, this violates our copyright and we don't want to see it anymore, which is really unfortunate because Nintendo is basically shutting down this amazing fan project that has years of reputation in the community. But I guess in exchange, recently I've been watching Kaizo Pokemon, which is equally stupid. It's ridiculously stupid.
And if I recall correctly, this speedrun happened during the summer event.
Not this year. No, it was AGDQ. It was the winter
one. Oh, okay, the winter event. But yeah, and my point being is I watched it and I was like, huh, why are they raising money? And did a quick look and it's like they're trying to get money by playing video games. How cool is that? Like, people are doing marathons to raise money, and those people are raising shit ton of money just by playing video games because people want them to see, want them to do cool stuff like you mentioned, or they, I don't know, by raising more money, they will unlock a new speedrun. I don't know, but all of this, like, side project of the video game culture and was really nice to hear about with all of the bad news we hear constantly these days.
Oh yeah, definitely. Next up, we have sort of experiments that show up on Twitch.
Twitch plays Pokemon.
Yeah, I was gonna say you probably know one of them. So Twitch Plays Pokemon was a thing that happened 2 years ago when someone basically hooked up an emulator to the Twitch chat, and you can type in left, right, A, B, select, start, basically any button on the Game Boy controls, and have those buffered up and then piped into the emulator, and then the Twitch chat is controlling the emulator to play Pokemon. And amazingly enough, they have beaten every Pokemon game that has come out.
And they also catch the 151st Pokemon.
Right, so there was a special modified version because you can't catch 151 officially in the original Red, Blue, Yellow game. So there was a special mod hack that basically unlocked all the Pokemon and they had to catch every single one, and they did. So there's basically no challenge you can throw at Twitch Plays Pokemon that they can't do over a long, long periods of time. And that's quite amazing. The channel is still running today, though most of the time it's running either Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon Stadium 2, Pokemon Battle Revolution, one of those games. And they have you bet on basically both sides of the Pokemon battle is controlled by CPU, and you get to bet on either side. That's what they do in between events, because eventually they'll put up another Pokemon game or a Pokemon ROM hack for people to try and beat via that. But so far, they have beaten every game that has been thrown at them, which is quite amazing.
Because I'm sure you cannot create a ROM for these events overnight. Okay? Those are in the works for at least a couple of weeks or even months.
Most of them were pre-existing ROM hacks that existed already. They were just putting them in the emulator. But the 3DS games, that required building actual hardware because there's no 3DS emulator. So they needed to mod the 3DS to get video out. That's the first thing. And then they needed to find a way to get the chat controls onto a physical 3DS. So they built basically this robot that was controlling a 3DS from the chat.
Oh my goodness. I can imagine that robot destroying the 3DS by smashing buttons.
Yeah, I can imagine that happening as well. But they've beaten X and Y and Alpha Sapphire and Omega Ruby over that method, and it seems to be doing very well. So, I don't know. On the opposite end of things, there's Twitch Plays Dark Souls, which I believe is still up. They are not doing very well at Twitch Plays Dark Souls because it turns out 3D games require a lot more coordination than turn-based battles in Pokemon.
Yeah.
And if you're not aware, Dark Souls is an incredibly difficult video game. And you lose all your experience when you die, and they die a lot because they're not very good.
I can imagine it being like X coordinate, Y coordinate, a Z coordinate to move or something like that. Would be funny.
It's not exactly that. It's like you choose a direction and a percentage, I think.
Huh.
And yeah. Something like that. I'm not sure.
That's
I don't remember.
Analogy enough.
Yeah. Twitch plays Dark Souls. Very entertaining if you want to see them die over and over again or get stuck in a ladder for 13 hours. Next
oh my
up,
goodness.
Fish play Street Fighter. Have you seen this one?
No.
Okay, so it's a fishbowl separated into 9 parts, and depending where the fish swim, that activates a different control. And so the fish were playing Street Fighter by swimming around the bowl, unknowingly playing Street Fighter.
You're seriously kidding me right now.
No, it's a real thing. It happens.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, fish plays Street Fighter. There was also fish plays Pokemon, but I think fish plays Street Fighter is more interesting because the fish were competing with each other. Except they didn't even know they were competing with each other.
Oh my goodness.
So crazy shit you find on Twitch, that's one of them. And the last one I want to talk about is actually really interesting. It's called Mar.io, and it's Seth Bling, which is a Super Mario World speedrunner, which I believe has the world record for Super Mario World right now. He is also a computer scientist, and he built an artificial neural network AI that plays Super Mario World and Super Mario Kart. So you can go watch an AI basically playing Mario levels over and over again until it figures out how to clear the level, or play Mario Kart until he finishes first.
Huh.
It's really interesting. I spent an entire afternoon just watching it play Mario Kart. It was really funny.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really interesting. But of course, I can't talk about Twitch without talking about the most common / popular Twitch stream. I don't really have a name for this other than popular Twitch style.
Yeah, and style made popular by Twitch, something like that.
Well, you'll see. So first of all, the screen is covered in scrolling text.
I hate those.
Yeah. So there are going to be several marquees, scrolling marquees on screen. Probably one for top donation or most recent donation, most recent follower, most recent subscriber, maybe another marquee for sponsors that they have or currently playing music if they have third-party music playing in the background. Every time someone subscribes to their channel by giving them a monthly subscription fee, or if they follow their channel or donate to the channel, they're going to say, hey, thanks to blah, blah, blah for doing X and I love your face or something equally stupid. This becomes untenable and borderline parody when a stream is extremely popular. I was watching a charity Destiny tournament a couple months ago, and literally every 15 to 30 seconds there was a new subscriber or follower or whatever. And there's also a jingle that automatically plays whenever such an event happens. So you would wind up with this nonstop loop of the same jingle, plus the person trying to A, play a video game, plus thank the person who just did whatever they did.
So let's make a break for thanking our donors this week.
Yeah, well, my example is, it's sort of like if on Twitter I tweeted, thank you, at username, for following me today on Twitter. You're the best and I love your face. Every single time I got a new follower, but the asterisk there is I get a new follower every 15 to 90 seconds.
Oh my goodness, we need to start to do that.
It's insane.
It's so creepy.
And the thing is, the stream becomes more about thanking people for giving them money than it becomes about being the game, so it's not particularly enjoyable to watch. But the thing is, people give money to get their name set on stream. It's ridiculous. It works. I don't understand.
Hey, if you can give money to somebody to get popular, why not doing so?
But you're not getting popular because you're one of the thousands of people who do it during that hour, basically. Well, not thousands of people per hour, but thousands of people per stream they do. So you're not particularly notable, and I don't understand at all. And many times, on the side of the stream, there's going to be the chat overlaid on there. Now, Twitch chat is better than YouTube comments. But YouTube gaming chat is worse than YouTube comments. I didn't know that was possible, but it is.
What? I think it's breaking my brain right now. What?
It's yes. Ridiculous. Yeah. I have never seen such stupid garbage as the YouTube gaming chat on basically any YouTube gaming stream. It is not worth paying attention to at all. But yeah, so sometimes they'll just overlay their chat over the right side of their stream. So now you can't really focus on what they're doing because you also have the scrolling chat on the right that you basically can't ignore. And you can't ignore it because the streamers engage with the chat room while they're playing the game. I'm not sure how they keep up with the chat room because it scrolls by so fast, but they do.
Okay, wait. So while they're supposed to play a game, so they play a game, like every 3 seconds they need to thank somebody.
Yes, and for also, giving them money.
Yeah, and also keep an eye on the chat and make sure that they still understand what's happening in the chat and follow conversation.
Yes.
That is also happening at like every a new message every couple of seconds or even each second.
Less than that, yeah. And the problem is there's so much churn from people going in and out of the stream that they get asked basically the same 3 questions every 5 seconds by different people repeated throughout the entire stream. So there are bots in the chat which automatically answer certain questions or automatically they automatically post frequently asked questions to the chat to answer the questions that are frequently being asked, except they're still answering them on stream every time it's being asked, more or less. It's ridiculous. I don't understand popular Twitch streamers. I really don't. And a lot of people are trying to emulate this formula because naturally they see it working with these people who have 50,000 viewers on their channel being engaged with in real time. It breaks my brain. I couldn't do it because it feels like you sell out so much. And you're not actually focusing on what's entertaining. You're just focusing on thanking people for giving you money or I don't understand. Now, if you're a subscriber on Twitch, you get some perks. Usually that is more or less just new emotes you can use in the chat, which is okay, I guess. You get new, basically, emoji you can use in the chat. Big deal. But a lot of them will also play with subscribers on stream. And it becomes sort of exploitative where you have people giving tens of thousands of dollars to the streamers so that they can prioritize playing with them. And I'm not making that up. People will actually donate thousands of dollars to their favorite streamers. I don't know how they do it.
You know what? If you want to donate me thousands of dollars, I will gladly thank you on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm going to mute it when I edit the podcast.
So now that I mentioned that, I just received a text message saying that I should thank... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, so that is popular Twitch streaming. I don't like popular Twitch streams, as you can probably tell. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand why they're popular. I don't know. It breaks my brain.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I still cannot understand how... Can you watch this? But, oh, well, maybe at some point I should try.
No, please don't. What you should do instead is do my favorite kind of stream, which are, I call them hangout streams, because basically that's what it is. You stream a video game you are playing by yourself, and you share the stream with your friends on Twitter and on Facebook, and you hang out and chat with your friends while you play video games. And that is basically how it should be. It's like having friends on your couch while you play a game, except the couch extends through the entire internet. And I sort of became aware that this was a thing when my friend Encore Stage on Twitter was streaming Fly Wrench, which is a masochore video game where you try to make your way to the end of a course without dying tragically. It's a very interesting game. You should go look at it on Steam.
You realize that you describe most games.
Yeah.
So that was a bit generic. Like, you try to go through the levels and not die. Like,
yes, but you die much more often than that. It's masochore because you have to be a masochist to play it. And you die, like, within seconds, and you restart the level instantly. It's basically like the Flappy Bird loop of very hard, but very rewarding when you get it. Except, I guess Flappy Bird has no end, whereas this has specific levels. It's basically like if Flappy Bird had more mechanics and had levels, is the way I would explain it.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, he was streaming Fly Wrench, and I was the only person in the chat for most of it. So it was really just like if we were hanging out on the couch and he was playing and I was just like dicking around next to him. So that was pretty interesting. And that made me try streaming Destiny when I was playing it. And so I basically returned the favor to Encore by streaming Prison of Elders level 28, and that doesn't mean anything to anyone who doesn't play Destiny, but basically It's a mode where you shoot things and they die, and then you get congratulated for having shot things to death. And joking aside, it basically allowed me to introduce all of the things that I really like about Destiny and the mechanics I liked about the last Destiny expansion to my friend by having him watch my stream. And I think there's sort of a lack of that. Like, streams explaining why you are so fond of X video game are more interesting than just watch me play this game for no reason. When there's a goal behind a stream, that's sort of interesting. Bonus feature for streaming stuff on Twitch is you can always rip the video later to use in other projects, and that's what I've been doing recently. So, as I mentioned earlier, new Destiny expansion is out, and the newest Destiny raid came out last Friday, and my friends and I are going through it blind without reading any walkthroughs or any information on the internet, which is proving to be quite challenging. And I am making video montages of us trying to figure out the raid mechanics and posting them to YouTube. Of course, if you're trying to experience the raid blind, I would not recommend you go check those videos out. But if you want to see us come up with all kinds of crazy theories and then have them shot down by dying a bunch of times trying to figure them out, you can go see that on my YouTube channel. And I promise I won't be thanking any of our fabulous sponsors during that stream. So the problem with Hangout streams is you're sort of limited because you can't get popular or else everything that makes the stream good disappears. If you become too big and your stream has more than like 12 or 20 viewers, it just becomes untenable and then you're back to basically just not being very interesting to watch. But I think Hangout streams are very interesting and I want to try to do a better job of doing Hangout streams and stuff like that in the future. But, like, I'm not trying to turn this into a job, because to try and turn it into a job, I'd have to try to become one of those popular streamers, and I don't understand the Twitch style at all, that I don't really want to do that. But
so what I hear right now is, if you have ever considered making a donation to Yannick, I would gladly suggest you to send it to me, and I'll do whatever you want.
Please go buy my app on the App Store. It has sold zero copies in the last month. I would greatly appreciate the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my voice is slowly dying because I've been sick all week. So we should probably end the podcast soon.
Yeah, maybe I just have a couple of comments / question.
Sure, go ahead.
And those hangouts are still happening on Twitch, right?
Yeah, I don't really know that many people who are taking YouTube gaming seriously. Unless they have a huge YouTube presence, in which case it makes sense for them to continue doing everything on YouTube because it's one centralized location for everything. But YouTube gaming is such a mess. I really don't like it. And I don't think that many people like it either.
But you did mention that you're uploading videos to YouTube and not Twitch.
Yes, because Twitch doesn't allow you to upload anything. It only lets you archive highlights, but the way highlights work is you trim a bit of your live stream.
And yeah, so you live stream and then you just cut off the bit
you want.
Okay,
which is not ideal for something like what I'm doing, which is just cut out the theories that we've had and then try to show us testing those theories, but not have the entire runs there, because otherwise, like, I edited 3 hours of content into 40 minutes. But you wouldn't want to watch us suck for 3 hours, basically. You just want to hear us come up with a crazy theory and then see us die because our theory is completely false, and then immediately go to the next theory instead of dicking around for another 35 minutes while we try to figure it out.
Yeah, you want to create your own story with this problem and then find the solution at the end and everybody is happy.
And that's sort of the thing with content on YouTube that is pre-recorded and edited, is that a lot of it comes down to the editing. And I'm not much of a fan of Let's Plays on YouTube either, because at least the popular Let's Players tend to go for, let's have crazy reactions or play games that are ridiculously difficult so we can have crazy reactions to these stupid bullshit levels like people are doing with Mario Maker right now. So I think a lot of that is, let's try to optimize our performance to get viewers. And I understand that because it's a business for those people. But that's just not what I consider to be entertaining to watch. I'd rather watch something that is intellectually stimulating other than just like, hi, I fell into an endless pit that I fell into because there was an invisible block on over this jump.
Yeah, but at the same time, I could see a game like Mario Maker making so much live stream where people just try to play the artist's levels that they encounter online. And I've seen a couple of those videos and I'm like, seriously, every second being like, what the fuck this person thought about designing this level is like so crazy.
Well, a little tension on Mario Maker. So Mario Maker is level editor for Super Mario games of the past, basically.
Not only in the past. You can get like...
New Super Mario Brothers U came out 2 years ago. So it's in the past.
Fine. But it's still considered current generation, quote unquote.
Sure, whatever. A garbage generation of Mario games. Anyway, so you can make levels for old Mario stuff. And naturally, what people are doing is making Kaizo-style crazy bullshit levels with a bunch of traps everywhere. And yes, that is incredibly popular on YouTube. And sort of the sad consequence of that is people who are making actually good possible levels are not making it anywhere into the top charts, because the only things that are in the top charts on Mario Maker are things that people have found from YouTubers or videos of really sadistic levels. And there's the other thing is, I remade Metroid in Mario Maker. I remade like Zelda 2 level in Mario Maker. And that stuff is cool from a yay, you managed to recreate something that already existed perspective. But it's not cool in the I am looking for good Mario levels that were created by original people who have never had access to the Mario creation tools in the past and would like to play them. Those people are completely screwed, because good luck finding those levels. They are buried under a bunch of sadistic bullshit.
Yeah, you're right. But at the same time, those levels are pretty funny to see.
Oh, they are. But the problem is, it's like you look at the top charts and it's auto-playing levels, which are entertaining to watch, except once you've watched it once, you never have to see it ever again because it plays itself, or remakes or sadistic levels, which you're probably not going to beat. You're going to go watch them on YouTube. So, like, actually playing the levels, you have to find basically a community of people who are sharing the IDs of the levels that are the good levels, instead of relying on the top charts and the things that they have to surface community levels, because you're never going to find them.
Anyway, good. So yeah, before you die,
yeah, we'll I can barely speak now.
Yeah, we'll end on this. You know what? I'll blame that this week you've been positive, so that's what your voice is like. Nope, and it cannot be positive.
Well, I'll just die. I've had a cold for a week, so.
No. That's not the reason.
I've been playing so much Destiny, I got sick.
Ah, what a bullshit reason! But oh well.
I'm gonna play more.
Yeah, so Yannick mentioned a lot of nice links and nice streams that you could maybe watch. So I will invite the listener to go on our website, which is limitlesspossibility.net/24, because this is episode 24. Also, you can find Limitless Possibility on Twitter at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. And you can find your favorite oats. This is Yannick and I on Twitter too. So you can find myself at Lucconoche, LUCCONOUCHE.
And you can find me at Sakurina, SAKURINA, which is also my username on Twitch.
Good. And is it the same for YouTube?
No, but I'll put a link in the description.
Good. So well, on that note, and see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Oh, good. Oh, my goodness.